The Song of Solomon, chapter 1. Song of Solomon, chapter 1. Read verses 1 through 7. The Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for thy love is better than wine. Because of the savor of thy good ointments, thy name is as ointment poured forth. Therefore do the virgins love thee. Draw me, we will run after thee. The king hath brought me into his chambers. We will be glad and rejoice in thee. We will remember thy love more than wine. The upright love thee. I am black but comely. O ye daughters of Jerusalem, as the tents of Kedar, as the curtains of Solomon. Look not upon me because I am black, because the sun hath looked upon me. My mother's children were angry with me. They made me the keeper of the vineyards, but my own vineyard have I not kept. Tell me, O thou whom my soul loveth, where thou feedest, where thou makest thy flock to rest at noon. For why should I be as one that turneth aside by the flocks of thy companions? In verse 1, we are told the nature of this book. It's a song. We are also told of its excellency. It is the Song of Songs. And we are also told the writer of the song. The Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. 1 Kings 4:32, we see that there are 1,005 songs attributed to Solomon. But this is the Song of Songs. Out of 1,005 songs that Solomon wrote, this is the Song of Songs, the most excellent of them all. And of the 66 books of the Bible, Song of Solomon is certainly one of the most unique. And again, it is a song. And it's figurative. It's allegorical. It abounds in metaphors and imagery. It is a song that portrays a man and a woman. It's a song that consists of many scenes. And through each of these scenes, this man, this woman, are seen in love and communion with one another. We see them expressing their love, their respect, their adoration and appreciation for each other. Throughout the song, there is an attachment. There's a closeness. There's a harmony between this man and this woman. They are synchronized with one another. It's a love song. A story of love told in a song. It is a song of love and unity of spirit between this one man and this one woman. Again, the two main characters of the song are this man and woman. And I believe that they are representative of Christ and His church, the kind that He established during His earthly ministry and that is still here today. The one He referred to as My church. That being said, the song has many applications to the life of an individual child of God. What we read throughout the song ought to picture ourselves and Christ as individuals. The verses that we read beginning in verse 2 are the words of the woman spoken of and to the man. And we want to approach this message from her perspective of him. Again, he represents Jesus Christ. And as you read the song, you see that he was the song of her life. He was the song of her life. The song of your life celebrates what you consider worthy. The song of a life declares what a person delights in, where their soul finds satisfaction, what it is that shapes their thoughts and their actions, what it is that refreshes their spirit. He was the song of her life. And her song was different, quite different from both the secular world and the religious world. He was her song. He was her song. David said in Psalm 40 in verse 3, "He hath put a new song in my mouth." He does not say, "I have learned a new song." That's not what he says. It was put there. It was put there by God. And we want to speak this morning on Jesus, the song of our life. Jesus, the song of our life. If Jesus is the song of your life, it is a God-given song. And it is a God-placed song. He is the song of our life. The song of our life is not about circumstances. It is a song about Him. It is a song that we carry with us through the circumstances of life. He is to be our song. A song that celebrates Christ. Not just for what He's done, but for who He is. He's the song of our life. Now the power of song is undeniable. The power of music is undeniable. A song has the power, the ability to pull you back, to take you to a place or a time in your life. And He is to be our song, filling us, filling our hearts and minds with precious memories. He is to be our song. Shaping our thoughts, shaping our actions. There's a lot of songs that I've heard throughout my life that I wish I could get completely out of my head. But not this one. He is the song of our life. Song has the power to set and change the mood of an event. And He is to be the song of our life. We want to note some things about this woman, which are the characteristics of Jesus as the song of our life. And we want to ask you this morning, is Jesus the song of your life? And don't just answer that question in your mind with a quick yes, but really examine it. Is Jesus the song of your life. We all have some favorite songs, and I'm not talking about hymns right now, worldly songs. And some of them there may not be anything wrong with. Some of them there's plenty of things wrong with. They come on the radio, and what do people do? They turn it up. Well, when you hear the name Jesus, do you turn that up? Does that perk your attention? Is he the song of our life? First thing we want to notice about this woman who Jesus was the song of her life, he was a reality to her. He was real. As you read our text, and as you read the song, she does not speak of him as abstract. She does not speak of him as a theory or an idea. She does not even speak of him in a doctrinal way. She speaks of him as a person. She uses 16 personal pronouns of him in our text. She speaks of him as one whom she had a personal knowledge and experience. She not only spoke of him, but she spoke to him, and we see that in our text. All through the song, she gives description of him. She knows him well enough that she can describe him. Do you know Jesus well enough that you can give a description of who he is? Not just a doctrinal discourse, but a description of who Jesus is. She speaks of his features. She speaks of his person. And from what she says of him, she's very, very familiar with him. She's very well acquainted with him. She speaks of him as one who has spent time with him, as one whom she has personally experienced. I believe this is necessary if Jesus is to be the song of our life. Reading through the song, we see that there was a personal connection. There was an involvement with him. But she describes him. She describes his mouth. She describes his voice. She describes his chambers. She describes his table, his shadow, his banner. She speaks of his left hand and she speaks of his right hand. She doesn't just speak of his hands. She speaks of left hand and right hand throughout the song. She speaks of his thigh. She speaks of his heart. She speaks of his head. She speaks of his locks, his eyes, his cheeks, his lips, his legs, his countenance, his garden, his desire. He was real to her. She was very familiar with him. In chapter 3 and verse 4, we hear her say, I held him. I held him. That's personal. That's reality. I held him. He was real to her. She speaks of him in the present tense as a reality in her everyday life. More of a reality than circumstances. He was more real to her than circumstances. He was more real to her than the times and the places where she found herself. Without this reality, he will not be the song of our life. If all you can do is describe him in a theological way, and we ought to be sound theologically concerning Christ, don't misunderstand me. But if that's all the description you can give, he's not the song of your life. And you don't have much. We need to be able to give a personal description. So we ask today, is this the Christ of the Word of God? Is he real? Is he real to you? Is he a living reality in the affairs of your life? So that's the first thing we want to see, is that he was real to her. That must be so if he's to be the song of our life. Nothing else is to be the song of our life. Not children, not grandchildren, not spouse. Jesus is to be the song of our life. Doesn't mean that nothing else is important. What it means is he is the most important. And he is the most meaningful. If Jesus Christ is not the most meaningful person in your life, you're not right with God. It's as simple as that. God help us that he be real to us. Secondly, very obvious, he was the love of her life. Verse 7, she says, O thou. Now notice, here she's speaking to him. She's not speaking of him here, she's speaking to him. O thou. If she was speaking of him, she would have said, O he. But she says, O thou, whom my soul loveth. O thou, whom my soul loveth. And all through the song, she makes reference to and expresses her love to him. We'll notice some things about her love. Her love for him was not detached from emotion. We see in verse 7 again, oh, a conjunction expresses emotion. We also see her emotion in verse 13 when she refers to him as her well-beloved, her well-beloved. And as you read through the song, it's packed with emotion. Her emotions are stirred at the thought of him. As you read through it, you cannot help but sense that there is great emotion in her. And as you read through the song, it's one that increases in excitement. It increases in passion. There's an increase in wonder concerning him. Reading through the song, there's a stirring within her concerning him. Is there a stirring within us concerning Jesus Christ? What is it that stirs us today? Reading through the song, you see responsiveness on her part toward him. Again, self-evaluation is necessary. What are your emotions with regard to Jesus Christ? What do you feel in regard to Jesus Christ, the one who saved your soul? How are you moved by Jesus Christ? Does He move you more than circumstances? Again, if He's the song of our life, we have strong emotions concerning Him. We're moved by Him. Her love for Him was personal. It was certain. She refers to Him over 20 times as my beloved. My beloved. 3 times she refers to Him as my love. My beloved. My love. We hear her say, Thou whom my soul loveth. My beloved. My love. Those are not shallow or empty words. We hear her say, Thou whom my soul loveth. My beloved. My love. There's not a hint. You read those words over and over. And there is not a hint of uncertainty in those words. She spoke those words with a tone of surety and confidence. There was no doubt in her mind that her soul loved Him. There are many who say they love the Lord, but if they look at their life, their words ought to be filled with doubt. Because there's nothing in their life that would back up that they love the Lord. You know, people, they live for the world and then they'll say, well, you know I love the Lord. And people say, well, I know you do. Don't say that. Be honest. I'm not so sure you do. What? Tell me something that would make me believe that you love the Lord. If we were honest, that's what we would have to say to a lot of people. I'm not about to tell somebody who shows nothing in their life that evidences that they love the Lord. I know you love the Lord. I'm not going to lie to them. I don't know. Nor does anybody else. You don't know. You can't. But she was certain. Her love was present tense. It is Thou whom my soul loveth. Present, continuous, ongoing. And when she says, my beloved, what that means is, He is the one being loved by me. Being loved by me. Beloved. He is the one being loved by me. It's love in every season. It's love in every circumstance. Continuous, ongoing, ever-increasing love for Him all the time. This is necessary if He is to be the song of our life. Her love for Him was deep. Love for Him was deep. We live in an age, we live in a time of great shallowness. Great shallowness. And we could give example after example. But that's not our point. And people know very little about depth today. But notice what she says. My soul loveth. My soul loveth. Nothing shallow about this love. It was a love that consumed her heart. It was a love that consumed her mind. It was a love that consumed her life. Now there are people today who say they love the Lord, but He's not the one that consumes their thoughts. He's not the one that consumes their life. There's other things that take that place. This was a love that reached the inner depths of her being, whom my soul loveth. It was a love that had control of her heart. A love that had control of her mind and life. And as we've said many times, love does not bypass the heart. Love does not bypass the mind. Love does not bypass the emotions. And love does not bypass life. There is a depth here. My soul. It is not some flash in the pan experience. She says, whom my soul loveth. She's speaking of the fact that she is taken completely up with Him. She's speaking of a love that was fervent. A love that was intense. A love that flamed forth. A love that boiled over. A love that could not be contained. This is not a love that you contain until Sunday. This is a love that cannot be contained all through the week. My soul loveth. When she said that, whom my soul loveth, she is trying to describe a feeling. She is trying to describe an emotion that was beyond description. Define the feeling of love that you have for a spouse or a child or a grandchild. You can't define it. You can't put it into words, the feeling, the emotion. And so much more should that be concerning Christ. O thou whom my soul loveth. She's trying to describe something that's beyond description. O thou whom my soul loveth. It is a love without reservation. The soul is our very existence. And she says, my soul loves Him. In other words, my very existence is bound up with Him. It is a love that cannot stand the thought of being away from Him. It is a love that cannot stand the thought of living without Him. It's what Paul described in Philippians 1:21, for me to live is Christ. Colossians 1:11, Christ is all. Christ is all. We read in Song of Solomon 8, verse 6, love is as strong as death. What does that mean? Well, death swallows up everything. Swallows up everything. Love is as strong as death. It swallows up all. It is all consuming. We read in Song of Solomon 8, verse 7, many waters cannot quench love. So it's a love that cannot be quenched. It is a love that cannot be overcome. Again, personal examination is necessary. What is the depth of our love to Him? We're speaking of Jesus as the song of our life. In order for Jesus to be the song of our life, we must love Him. And there must be a depth to that love. Is our love for Him a love that involves our entire being? A love that shapes and moves and defines our life. That's what it means when she says, O thou whom my soul loveth. Her love for him was a priority. Whom my soul loveth. My beloved, my love, my well-beloved. These words state that he is the priority in her life. It is a love that exceeds all others. He's the center of her interest. He's the focal point of her life. He's the meaning of her life. If Jesus Christ is not the center of our interest, if Jesus Christ is not the focal point and the meaning of our life, then he's not our song. Is Jesus Christ the song of our life? Is he the one that defines our motives, our purposes, our viewpoints? Don't let the world define your viewpoints. Don't let the talking heads define your viewpoints. If Jesus is the song of your life, he defines your viewpoints. And if he defines your viewpoints are different than the world's. Does he define our goals? Or does the world define our goals? Does the business world define our goals? What is it that defines our goals? Our desires? Our pursuits? He's to be the defining one. It is this love that will prevent misplaced values and priorities. And misplaced values and priorities result in the endless pursuit of the secondary. Look around. People are pursuing the secondary. They're not pursuing the main thing. Jesus. Jesus Christ. It is a love that simplifies life. People will say all the time, I need to simplify my life. I want to tell you the best way to do that. Love the Lord with all your heart. Put Him first in everything. That'll simplify your life. You know how you make your life complicated? You put something ahead of the Lord. That's what complicates life. People will say, well, I'm just so busy. Why is that? Why are you so busy? And be honest. Because you've put other things ahead of the Lord. You've complicated your life. This is the way to simplify life. Put Jesus first in all things. Is he the song of our life? Her love for him identified her with him. Chapter 2, verse 16, she says, my beloved is mine, and I am his. And in chapter 6, verse 3, she reverses the order. She says, I am my beloved's, and my beloved is mine. And in those two statements, there is a link, there is a bond, there is an attachment, there is a togetherness, there is a common ground and agreement between them. That's how it must be. If Jesus is the song of our life. Her life was identified by a real person in her life, Jesus. A real person who had a continuous impact upon her life. What impact does Jesus have upon your everyday life? Well, I go to church on Sunday. That's not what I asked. What impact does Jesus have on your life every single day? Take Sunday out of the equation. What impact does Jesus have upon your life every day? How closely identified is your life with Jesus Christ, the Savior of your soul? Is your life identified with Him? Notice also her life for him, her love for him, was public. It wasn't a secret. Chapter 3 and verse 3, she said to the watchman, that's the secular world, saw ye him whom my soul loveth? To the secular world, she is telling them, my soul is in love with Jesus Christ. And in chapter 5 and verse 8, she said to the daughters of Jerusalem, that's the religious world, if ye find my beloved, tell him, I am sick with love. My beloved! She also said to the daughters of Jerusalem, in their hearing, she referred to him as my love. My love. She was unashamed of her love for him, both in the secular world and the religious world. She was uninhibited to declare her love for him to others. We need to testify. We need to testify of Jesus Christ. We need to testify concerning who he is, both to the secular world and the religious world. I love him. It's a testimony to family. Testify to everyone in your family, I love the Lord. My soul loves him. He's my beloved. He's everything. Chapter 5, verse 16, she declared, this is my beloved, talking to the daughters of Jerusalem. This is my friend. A friend of the closest kind. And you know what? No one had to wonder. When she said, whether she was speaking to the secular world or the religious world, when she said, my beloved, they didn't have to wonder who she was talking about. They knew. Because her life manifested it. Others could see who the love of her life was. Speaking to her in chapter 5, verse 9, and chapter 6, verse 1, they said, thy beloved, four times. Thy beloved. They recognized who the love of her life was. Does the world know who the love of our life is? Does our family know? Does our brothers and sisters in Christ know? Everybody ought to know. Thy beloved. There ought not be any doubt in their mind that he's the love of our life. We ought not be ashamed of that. He's the love of our life. This was her testimony. I love him. So again, personal examination is needed. Do we have a testimony of love for Jesus Christ? Or does our love, or does our life declare loud and clear, there's other things more important. There's other things more important than the Lord. But when I can fit him in, you can count on me. You know what that means? Can't count on you. Can't count on you. When I can fit him in, I'll be there. If I can fit him in, if everything lines up, you can count on me. It's not love. When it's convenient, you can count on me. You can't be counted on then. God help us. From all this, we see that her love to him was a love that caused excitement. It was a love that made her sensitive to him. We ought to be more sensitive to Christ than anyone else in the whole world. There's a love that filled her life with meaning. And because of her love, she sought a different path. She says in verse 7, "For why should I be as one that turneth aside by the flocks of thy companions? My soul is in love with him. Why should I walk according to the path of this world? Because of my love for him, my path is different than the path of the world." How many times parents have said, "Well, I was made fun of in school because of church and because of the Lord, and I don't want my kids to go through. You ought to fall to your knees and repent." How ungodly. How wicked. How shameful. Such an attitude. You ought to pray every single day that Jesus Christ would be the love of your children's life. And that they would manifest it. Every single day. And that they would take a different path than the world. And how many parents they say to their children, "We want you, you're different. We want you to take a different path." But when it comes to college and everything else, what do? Push them right into the path of the world. This is what you've got to do. How shameful. And then parents will sit back. I'm getting ready to preach another message. I'm not going to. "I don't know what happened to my children." Review your life. Review your life. Review the example you have set. "I don't know why my children choose work over church." Review your life. You probably did. You probably did that. "I don't know why they put everything else above church." And you know what? You only have to do it once or twice. If you did it once or twice in your life, you set a bad example. "But I just don't know what happened." Wake up. And that's why there will not be a revival in the Lord's churches, because God's people need to wake up. And God's people don't want to wake up. Because if they open their eyes, it's going to be painful what they see. Is He the song of our life? I'm afraid most it would be a stretch. It would be quite a stretch for them to say, "Jesus is the song of my life." That shouldn't be a stretch. That should be real. She was not content to go with the flow. She wanted a different path. And that's why when God's people say, "Well, everybody else does it," you should not be content to go with the flow. She wanted to be where he was. That ought to be us. Ought to want to be where he is. And from scriptures, we are told, Matthew 18, that he meets with his church. He's there. Ought to want to be where he is. Ought to want to be where he is. Doesn't take many aches and pains today to keep God's people out of the house of God. Here's what I believe. You can get mad if you want to. Prove it otherwise. I believe many people look for aches and pains. They look for a reason to stay out of church. "Oh, I just felt a twinge. Oh, we better stay home today. Oh, I love the Lord so much." Who do you think you're kidding? You're not fooling the Lord. God help us that He would be the song of our life. We've got much more, but we'll stop. As you go on, you see that He was the desire of her life. He was the object of her life. And she had a desire to be near him. She said in verse 4 of our text, draw me. Draw me. Lord, move me closer to you. I'm not content with the distance that's between us. Lord, move me closer. Draw me. Pull me. Pull me towards you. Tug at me. Move me closer to you. It's a plea and cry for him to do something on her behalf. Draw me. Oh, we don't have any problem asking the Lord to do something on our behalf. But do we ask this? Lord, draw me. That should be our plea every day. Lord, there's a distance. There always is. No matter how close you are, there's still a distance. Still a reason to pray. Draw me. She wanted to experience him more. Do you want to experience him more, or are you satisfied? She wanted to be more identified with him. Lord, draw me. She wanted to be closer. She's pleading for an effectual display of his power. She says, draw me, we will run after thee. She's, it's effectual. Manifest yourself in such a way that it effectually draws me closer to thee. So as you read through the song, you see one who has a heart that beats for the Lord, beats for him. We see these two synchronized with one another. Oh, for our lives to be synchronized to the one who saved our soul. The one who saved our soul. If you are saved, can you be content? Can you be content with your life not being synchronized with him? Can you possibly be content with that? Are you satisfied with that? Again, this is the Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. Is it the song of our life? Is Jesus the song of our life? Is he? We need to make personal examination. Is he the song of our life? Is he what gives meaning to our life? And if not, then all you're doing, my friend, is playing a game. It's all you're doing. It's all you're doing. You're fooling yourself and trying to fool others. He has to be the meaning of our life. And we need to pray. If he's not, you need to pray that he will be. That the Lord will do whatever is necessary to bring you to that point. Husband and wife. Many couples have a song, they say. Our song. Well, here's what should be your song. Jesus. That should be the song of a couple's life. That should be the song of your home. Jesus. Is he the song of our life? There is no better song. There is no better. There is no better life to live than live for him. When you get to heaven, you read through the book of Revelation. All the times where the saints are gathered around the throne of God. What are they singing about every single time? Jesus. He's the song of heaven. But we don't have to wait to heaven for him to be our song. He ought to be our song right now. Brother Jim, if you'd come and lead us in verse song.